Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I've got the man himself, my good buddy Brent Johnson, in the house today live. Brent, talk to me. The DXY is over 102 today.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Your note, it popped up on my calendar and it said GG. And I never really put that together before George Gammon and Gordon Gekko. Maybe that's a little foresight there.
Yeah. Some of my buddies used to call me that. Yeah. GG. Yeah.
There you go. Good. Yeah. Dollar's been making a run here over the last, you know, it's kind of been a slow rise over the last 6 months, to be honest. You know, we haven't yet had like a big surge. It's been pretty steady. And to be honest, I kind of feel like that's why, I mean, don't get me wrong, we've had volatility in the last month. You know, we've had swings in volatility both ways. And as it goes higher, we're going to continue to see volatility. But, you know, if you remember back to March 2020, we saw crazy volatility when the dollar was at these levels. And so with the VIX at 30, I mean, that's high, but it's not like super high, right? And yeah. I think until you see like a really surging dollar where it moves, you know, 2-4% in a day, you know, then you're going to see the spiking volatility. But if it just kind of keeps, you know, plugging along, you know, it may take longer than expected to really cause some problems.
How much of the move do you think is a result of Russia?
You know, I'm sure that's part of it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of unintended consequences that people don't quite understand and that people haven't quite realized yet with regards to Russia. And, you know, I think, you know, with what Russia has done and the rise of the ruble, I think a lot of people don't understand what's going on there. The ruble is not convertible. I mean, the reason that it's risen, and I'm sure part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, they went out and they bought gold, and some of it has to do with the fact that they've asked to get paid in gold. But most of it has to do with the fact that you can't sell it. The banks in Russia, they get any kind of other currency, they have to immediately sell it and buy rubles with it. You know, and they're not allowed to sell the ruble and convert it to anything else. So when you have a market where all you can do is buy it, and it can't be, the only people that can sell it is the Russian central bank. I mean, there's really only one direction for it to go. So it's, at this point, it's a highly manipulated currency. But along with that, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff kind of behind the scenes that many people don't even know about, and that I don't know about, and that others don't know about, that is having market effects, and that is no doubt putting some pressure on the dollar to go higher.
Yeah, and I think just the dollar as a safe haven asset, and the likelihood of, let's say, World War III, heaven forbid, but that's, you know, everyone going into the dollar or dollar assets, you know.
Well, you know, long time, before I forget, I wanted to tell you, like, since Russia invaded Ukraine, if I had to ask 100 people what was the best performing currency, you know, since Russia invaded Ukraine, I think most people would say gold or silver. But since Russia invaded Ukraine, the dollar is actually up 5%. Gold is flat, and you know, silver is down 5%. So, to your point of a safe haven, I'm sure that it is getting some safe haven flows.
Yeah, the thing is, there. I mean, I hope it doesn't go this direction, but we may see that exacerbated in the future if the United States continues to want to get involved, and Sweden and Finland join NATO, and all, you know, who knows where it's going to go. Hopefully it won't go that direction, but that would obviously give a lot more tailwind to the dollar. And even if that is temporary, I think it's important that people understand that as the dollar gets higher and higher against other currencies, that kind of takes you into a feedback loop where it reduces dollar liquidity. It reduces dollar cash flows, especially if we have a global recession. And then, you know, you get defaults on dollar debt, which means less dollar liquidity, which means more demand for dollars to pay off the debt, which means they're selling their local currency to get dollars, very similar to Turkey. And then you have people locally saying, okay, well, what the hell do I do? And therefore, their only option is pretty much to buy gold or buy dollars or dollar-denominated assets, which plays directly into your dollar milkshake. But then I don't know that people have even taken it that far, but then if they take it the next step, I think it gets really fascinating, because if you have all these entities, pools of money outside the United States coming in and buying dollar assets from potentially non-bank entities in the United States, it increases M2, which means that there could be a lot more dollars in the United States chasing goods and services.
Prices higher.
There you go. And I think people, and we've talked about this many times.
That's the milkshake. That is the milkshake right there when those dollars come back home.
Yeah.
But
what people really fail, what they do is they conflate the dollar going up with on the DXY with deflation. They can't compartment or they can't disentangle those two things to understand the DXY can go to 105, 110, whatever, and we can still have the CPI in the United States humming along at 5, 6, 7, 8, who knows, maybe even higher. And that's because I think you get a lot of flack from people that say, oh, Brent's crazy. The CPI is at 9% and that understates it by 10%. And, the dollar is not going up. It's going to go down. And they don't understand that it's a much different question when you're asking the dollar compared to goods and services locally versus the dollar against the euro or the yen.
Yeah. And it's kind of always been my contention is like, listen, guys, I get it that the dollar is a whole of our currency. It's just better than everything else. And, I tweeted something out the other day that, oil at 150 bucks would be really, really bad. But, what would be worse is the price of it as the price that it would be in Japan or Europe or China.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
This is truly the worst of all worlds economically, and I don't say that to be dramatic. I mean, I really believe that, and that's why, if people were to go back and to listen to the very first presentation that where I ever said the word milkshake, in 2018, I said this is a story that ends very, very, very badly. Nobody wins in this game, right? But there's a progression. And there's an order to which I think things will fall. It doesn't mean that somebody comes out looking good, but if you have to place your assets somewhere, you want to find the least bad option, right? And unless you want to put all of your money into gold and silver, which some people do, and that's fine. But if you don't want to put all your money into gold and silver, and you want to have a diversified portfolio, I think the next most important question that you can ask is what currency do I want to do that in? And where geographically do I want to have those assets held? And my answer is the United States and the dollar. Now, I know some people will disagree with that, but based on how things are playing out, I still think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah. Along the lines of this whiteboard video I did today, I think it was step two where I tried to kind of play devil's advocate with myself. And say maybe some of the pushback that you get is, yeah, Brent, I understand what you're saying, but the United States is going to do QE infinity and, the stock market's going to crash and the Fed's going to come in and drop rates back down to zero and they're going to continue the $120 billion a month, if not more. And then I tried to play you on the other side and I said, most likely what Brent would say is, sure, that's true, but what is the Bank of Japan going to do? What is the ECB going to do? And in step one, I pointed out that the yield on the treasury on the 10-year right now is roughly 2.7%. The yield on the 10-year bund is 0.8%. And the yield on the 10-year JGB is about 0.24%. And not only that, but the Fed, and I'm not here to compliment the Fed by any stretch of the imagination.
It's really hard not to. Yeah. I get into that.
They tapered down to zero where the Bank of Japan is increasing the size of their balance sheet. And the ECB is saying that we're going to still do quantitative easing until whatever Q3 or Q4. Right. And then I heard Japan just come out today and say that they're going to do stimmy checks. They're going to do stimmy checks for energy, just like we did back in 2020 and 2021. So if you're that Japanese investor, what do you do given those options?
Yeah, and this kind of, I can't even try to think about how many times I have said over the last 2 or 3 years or how many times I've tweeted it out that the more they print of the US dollar, the higher the DXY will go. And it's because everybody else will have to match it. It's just the way the system is set up. And, I probably don't have time to go through the whole reason that is, but every other, in a debt-based monetary system where you have a global reserve currency where all commodities and goods and trade invoices are priced in one currency, or the majority of them are, all the other currencies effectively become a derivative of that global reserve currency. And so you're not going to see a situation where the global reserve currency goes into hyperinflation or high levels of inflation before the periphery currency. So it just doesn't work that way. Now, I'm not saying it can't happen. If everything happened right at once and it happened to all currencies at the same time, then theoretically that's possible. But it's unlikely to play out that way. And probably the reason I've pounded the table as hard as I can on this is so that people have an understanding of the way the system works. Now, you don't have to like the system. You don't have to agree that's the way the system should be. And perhaps it's even okay to work really hard to change the system. I get it. But it's really important to understand how the system works, because these big global macro themes, they always take longer to play out than you think they're going to. And I'm guilty of this too. I'm kind of surprised we're still sitting here in 2022 talking about this. Like I said earlier, I've been talking about it since 2017, and I probably was talking, or 18, I was probably talking about it in 2016 if I were to really go back and look at stuff. But it just takes a really long time for this stuff to play out. And, you know, most people don't have the luxury of just waiting for the end game, putting all their money in gold as an example, and just waiting for the end game. Most people have bills to pay and lives to lead, and you know, they have to mark to market if they're, you know, in the stock market, or if they're a financial professional. They don't have the luxury of just putting it all on one thing and sitting back and sitting there. Now, if you do have that luxury and you want to make that bet, then that's fine. That's totally fine. But if you're at all interested in the path, and remembering that the path could take years to play out, it's really, really important to understand the mechanics of how the whole thing works.
Yeah, I think it's crucial that people designate their time horizon.
Yeah.
And that was one of the conclusions of the video today, is I tried to say that I asked the question, has the dollar milkshake begun? And the conclusion was, it's not only begun, but it started a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Because the forces that are at play have been at play for a long time. So it's not like it's either Bretton Woods 3 or the dollar milkshake theory. It's that these two forces are happening simultaneously. And there are these cross currents. And it's just a matter of which cross current is overwhelming the other cross current at any given time. Because, you know, you could have the dollar milkshake theory while at the same time, Saudi Arabia is pricing more of its oil in yuan, or Russia is doing yuan deals, you know, where they would have done dollar deals with China or India, something like that. So these things are happening simultaneously. Yeah. It's just which one is overwhelming the other. And the conclusion that I always come to, it's, you know, over the short run, next 6 months or a year, especially if the United States gets involved with this war, especially if the inversion of the yield curve is any indication that the United States goes into a recession, then most likely you're going to see the DXY keep going up and up and up, which could trigger that kind of chain reaction. But you ask me 5 years, 10 years, 15 years out down the road, sure, I think you're going to have this gradual attrition of the use of the dollar and that dollar denominated debt, which means, you know, just like when the British pound lost its currency, it just happens slowly over years and decades.
Yeah, and I think you touched on something there that I probably should have mentioned earlier with regard to the dollar's kind of slow rise higher, and that is that one of the biggest pushbacks, I guess I get, for lack of a better word, is that people will say, look, Brent, China and Russia are now trading in yuan and rubles, or Saudi Arabia is starting to sell a small percent of their overall thing in yuan, or whatever it is, right? Or this country is doing that bilateral trade deal and they're not using dollars. How can you not see this? So just to be clear, and I'll repeat it again, I've said this several times, I'm saying, I see it. I agree with you. De-dollarization is absolutely something that is wanted. And de-dollarization is absolutely something that is being attempted. The question is, how successful will it be? And the point I always make is that the process of de-dollarization, which maybe will take a year, maybe it will take 30 years, I don't know. But what I'm pretty sure of, I'm not certain about anything, but what I'm pretty sure of is that the process of de-dollarization is actually a positive catalyst for the price of the DXY in the intermediate term. Because if you have
liquidity,
less dollar liquidity, exactly. All the debt still exists. But now if you're if you have less trade in dollars, but all those dollar debts still exist, that's a credit crunch. That's a liquidity squeeze, right? And so you could see, and that's why I always say the dollar will die. Again, I don't know when, but I believe it will die of strength, not weakness. Now maybe anything's possible. Perhaps, if it takes 20 or 30 years and it's just a very slow, gradual grind and countries stop issuing new debt in dollars, which so far they're not. They're issuing more dollars in debt than they ever have before. The world is more in dollar debt today than it was 2 years ago. Canada just came out and issued a dollar bond, for God's sakes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, if they stop issuing new debt in dollars and they slowly wean off from the dollar, and in the meantime, interest rates don't spike and cause a credit crisis, and if governments start getting their finances under control, there's a lot of ifs. And the probabilities of these ifs are extremely small. But if they did all those things, maybe it's possible that over a period of 10 or 20 years, the dollar could lose global reserve status and it would not cause a dollar spike. But I just believe it's too little, too late. I don't think that they can fix this problem before the dollar spikes and kind of causes this global sovereign debt crisis, for lack of a better word. Yeah. And I think that pain is what will cause them to reset the system. But until then, I think the dollar just marches higher.
Yeah, and to be perfectly clear, when Brent is saying, and we'll reiterate this, I know we're beating a dead horse, but this is something that people just can't get their head around. When he's saying dollar strength, he's not talking about the dollar relative to the groceries that you're buying at Whole Foods or Safeway or wherever you buy your groceries or your insurance payments or the gas that you're putting in the car. Simply saying the strength against the euro, strength against the yen.
That's right.
And, you've got to compartmentalize those.
There's an important point to be made here, and I'm going to touch on both of them because this is really the key to the whole theory. And I often get labeled a deflationist because I think the dollar's going higher. And typically when the dollar goes higher, that does cause deflation. But if you actually listen to the theory and understand what it says, it's actually an inflationary theory that is punctuated by terrifying deflationary waves along the way. So
deflation in what, asset prices or deflation in what?
Potentially both. But certainly in asset prices, but potentially both. And so let me tell you what I mean by that. And perhaps those deflationary waves will only last a few weeks or a few months, right?
Right.
But the big argument, God, I could go off on so many tangents right now. I'm going to try to stay focused. Okay. So the big argument over the last couple of years is, inflation transitory, or is deflation dead? And and everybody's just so certain, of which side they're in. And again, the thesis is inflationary because the central banks and the monetary authorities are going to provide liquidity, right? And so over time, prices will rise. And my point has been that no matter how much the U.S. prints, everybody else will print more or provide more stimulus. And we don't have time to get into the whole what is actual money printing and what isn't, but my point is the U.S. will capture most of that liquidity, and that will push prices higher. And as the dollar goes higher and asset prices go higher and cost of goods goes higher, all these other countries are going to have to print their local currencies in order to fight it. And so that is how you get the dollar rising and dollar prices going higher. So you can get inflation in the US, either asset price inflation or good inflation, with the DXY going higher.
Yeah.
But then these other currencies, we can use the Turkish lira as an example, we can use the Argentinian peso as an example, we can even use the yen and the euro as an example.
I was gonna say the yen now, the yen just tanked.
Right, and we should probably touch on that. But the point is they have to print their local currencies, and their local currencies do not have global demand the same way that the dollar does. Right. And so you can get Japan and China and Turkey and these other countries, what's happening to them now? This is truly the worst of all worlds. I said that earlier. What I mean is, when you have inflation in your local currency, inflationary pressures in your local currency, but deflationary pressures in the global reserve currency or in your funding currency, so that your top line and you've got slowing global, you've got slowing growth, that you're getting squeezed from all directions. And the way that governments typically deal with that is they provide even more stimulus. They provide even more liquidity. And it, to your point earlier, it becomes this vicious feedback loop. And so, that's what we see going on in Japan right now. And it's somewhat vindicating for me to see what's happening to the yen right now, because what I've tried to explain to people, and listen, and this, I do not want to be the I told you so guy. Nobody likes that guy. Nobody likes that guy. But I need to use this as an example to kind of prove my point. So hopefully people will pay attention going forward. A lot of people have said the U.S. is going to have to, they can never stop buying bonds. They're going to have to do yield curve control. They can't let interest rates rise. And of course, that is absolutely true. It's just that it's also true for everybody else. Mm. And as Japan has had slow growth, and as interest rates have started to rise around the world because of the inflationary effects that even Japan is now feeling after 30 years of deflation, even Japan is feeling the inflationary effects. Yields have started to rise. Your point earlier, they've gone up 0.25% or whatever it is, right? They've gone from zero to 0.25 or the 10-year.
Yeah, but the BOJ said that they will buy an unlimited amount.
But this is my point. So the Bank of Japan has to make a decision. Do we save the currency or do we save the bond market? You cannot save both. And this is the point that they always make with the dollar. The Fed's going to have to buy all the bonds, and that's going to kill the dollar. Okay, fine. But it's already happening in Japan. And that's why you see the yen falling so much versus the dollar. So now the Bank of Japan, if they choose to save the currency, then that means interest rates rise, and all these insurance companies, all the banks, all the pension funds in Japan get completely wiped out because they have tons and tons and tons of zero or negative yielding bonds on their books.
Right.
So they can't choose the currency over the bond market. So what they've said is we will choose the bond market over, and we will buy however many bonds is necessary to keep yields low. So what that means, every time they go and they do like an extraordinary bond buying program, they're putting more yen into the market, more supply, you know, the price falls. And this is going to happen all over the world. This is how you get, you know, the dollar rising alongside global inflationary pressures.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today.
While gold rises as well. I mean, that's another thing people
really can't get their head around is gold and the dollar rising at the same time against other currencies.
Let me make one more point before I forget, George, because this is important too. And this goes back to the whole inflation or deflation debate. And the reason I say you cannot ignore, I agree with the overall inflationary thesis over time. I completely get it. However, you cannot ignore the possibility of a deflationary event along the way, because the dollar is the
How would you define deflation, Brent?
In terms of
CPI or assets, I mean, are you saying that you would see the CPI going to negative?
Not necessarily for very long, but it could happen. And I'll tell you how it could happen. And it could happen exactly the way it happened in 2020. If you have a situation where the underlying collateral, which is the dollar, becomes very scarce and demand comes very high, then you get a spiking dollar. You know, like I said, for the last 6 months, it's just kind of stair-stepped very slowly higher. But if you get a spiking dollar, remember in 2020, it went from 94 to 102 in 10 days. That's a wrecking ball, right? So if that were to happen again, all of a sudden you start getting margin calls and people have to start selling things and businesses start shutting down and then people get laid off and then demand falls. And then, you remember in 2020, the oil went from, what was it, 60 or 70 bucks to negative, right? So if you get some kind of a liquidating market because the underlying collateral is just not there, it's like musical chairs, right? You know, when the music stops, the price of a chair goes up exponentially. The same, if that, and I don't know if it will, but the possibility is always there. In a debt-based monetary system where money is loaned into existence and there's only so much actual dollars that exist, there's always the possibility for a liquidity squeeze or a dollar squeeze, however you want to describe that. And if you get a spiking dollar and you get massive asset price deflation, that can temporarily lead to consumer price deflation as well.
Yeah.
Now, it will be counteracted. It will absolutely be counteracted. The governments will come in. They will put price controls. They'll provide stimulus. They'll buy, of course. But in the very short term, you could get a 1 or 2 week or a 1 or 2 month deflationary wave, even though you're stair-stepping higher inflationary over a number of years. And that's that. This has always been my point, is that because of the design of the system and because there is a dollar shortage, whether people want to believe that or not, you know, it's just the design of the system. There's never enough dollars. That's why it has to grow. There's always the possibility for a liquidating market
And another way for people to get their head around that even better is it's not just saying that there's not enough dollars, but it's also saying that the velocity of dollars is too low.
Yeah, no, that's another way of saying a lack
of dollar cash flow from economic activity declining, whether it's in the United States or globally.
Yeah, so in several of my presentations, I've put up a slide that it has a plus sign and it has a little circle with with arrows. And my point is that in the debt-based monetary system, you have to have one of those two things or the whole system collapses. And what those things represent is supply and velocity. If you have enough velocity of the existing stock, then everything works fine. But if that velocity comes to a stop or is not going fast enough, then they have to put more supply in. And it's one of the two. And if they don't do one of those two things, the system will completely collapse.
Yeah. You know, do you have a couple more minutes?
Yep.
Okay. Let me do a quick screen share. And I want to show you Michael Burry's tweet. I think it was from today. I think this kind of just goes to your point. If we're trying to think about the market potentially collapsing and the economy declining to a point in the United States where we get like that GFC moment where we have 2 or 3 months of actual deflation. I know that's hard for people to imagine right now when the CPI is at 8.5 or 9. But if we just think about this, I'm going to pull up this tweet really quick here. Josh, can you make sure we're on that? And right here, I just retweeted it. He said, this is the problem. Last 18 months, $850 billion in direct stimulus checks, $400 billion in cash out refis, $1 trillion in forgivable loans, another $4 trillion indirect, et cetera. What recapitalizes the consumer now? Higher wages can't do that. And I would argue that even if wages are going higher nominally, I think what he's saying is that if the rate of inflation actually exceeds that, then that still is decreasing purchasing power along with what everything else that he is saying. So unless the government comes out with another $5 trillion STIMI program, CARES Act 2.0, I think his point is that the consumer is going to have a lot less purchasing power. And in an environment where you need higher rates of velocity, you know, how does that play out other than the economic activity declining, i.e. recession?
Right. And that's kind of the point that I always want to get across, is I don't care whether people call me an inflationist or a deflationist. What I care about is that people understand how the system works and how it has to be inflationary over time or it collapses. But that doesn't mean that there won't be deflationary scares along the way.
Yeah. So I think if we had our good buddy Peter Schiff on the line right now, he would push back and say, Brent, you're wrong, because the government, the U.S. is going to have to run such massive deficits, that's dual deficits.
Yeah.
So let's just say the deficit, you know, the market crashes, the Fed comes in with QE, the government comes in with CARES Act 2.0, which instead of $5 trillion, now because of the monetary heroin, they need more of it to have the same effect. So that goes up to a $7 trillion deficit, let's say, and that our trade deficit, it goes from $100 billion a month up to $200 billion a month. So that's an additional...
I'm still here.
Yeah, but your name is Luke Groman. Did you do that as a joke, Luke?
Yeah, I wondered how long it was going to take you to figure that out.
I just noticed that.
But I lost the camera. Did my camera go off or something?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm going to have to take a screenshot of that so I can DM it to Luke when we get done. He'll get a kick out of that. But anyway, what I was saying is that we're running these $7 trillion deficits in the United States along with all this QE. And doesn't that mean that the trade deficit, let's say, goes from $100 billion a month up to $200 billion? That's another $100 billion that's injected into the global monetary system. Isn't that going to provide the dollar liquidity needed and maybe overwhelm the dollar liquidity, therefore bring the dollar down? I think that would be Peter's argument.
My answer to that would be...
Yeah, and I think Peter's argument there, Brent, was just that the trade deficit would go from $100 billion, let's say, a month to $200 billion, and that's going to be $100 billion worth of dollars that are getting out there circulating in the global economy. Wouldn't that overwhelm what you're saying?
I think in the very short term, it probably would. And maybe we would have an event like 2020 where the dollar fell for six, nine months, maybe 12 months.
Right.
But then unless everybody stops, you know, issuing dollars or debt in dollars, and, you know, unless the whole world changes its behavior, we're going to be right back where we are now, you know, 6 months, 12 months after that. I mean, if you just look back to where we were 2 years ago, right? I mean, it was... You know, once the dollar started falling and they started printing, everybody was just absolutely certain that the dollar was going to zero. I mean, I say zero, that's an exaggeration. They thought it was going to 80 or 70 or whatever
it
was.
Right.
And my point was that, yeah, this can go on for a while, but unless they completely redesign the system, it can't go on forever because the system just doesn't work that way. And Japan's going to have to print and Europe's going to have to print and, you know. Yeah, I keep saying the more DXY, the more the Fed prints, the higher the DXY is going to go. And you're seeing it play out now in Japan. You know, one point I wanted to make on Japan earlier, because you were asking how could we get a deflationary wave. One way it would be is, and the yen is really part of it. Again, I think the yen breaking down is probably the most important thing that people are starting to talk about it now the last couple days or a week, but. You know, two or three weeks ago, I was posting these 40-year charts of the year, the yen and the euro, saying, watch out when this breaks. And now the yen has broken through that 40-year support. The reason that is important is because the yen is obviously an important global currency, but especially a regional currency. And, you know, it's a big competitor with China. And with Japanese yields, or I mean, with Japanese yen being now falling, And the yuan having been fairly strong over the last year, one of the stronger performing global currencies, that means the Japanese goods are much more competitive with Chinese goods. And if you look over the last 10 years, the last two times that the yen dramatically weakened, the yuan eventually followed. And when you look at it on the chart, it doesn't look that dramatic, but you have to remember that the yuan is a managed currency and it's pegged to a basket of currency. So, you know, it's not a free floating currency. So the fact that it's a pegged currency and it weakened anyway meant that the PBOC was under immense pressure and they had to let it devalue a little bit. Right. And right now, if you think about what's going on in China, number one, their growth is slowing. Number two, their real estate market is under extreme pressure. So both of those are deflationary forces. They've also, though, they have all of the things that they import, meaning energy and food, is the prices of those have risen. So they're dealing with both inflation and deflation. And my guess, and now that the yen is weakening, it's putting even more pressure on the yuan. And I think it's possible that they are going to have to let the value of their currency fall to remain competitive and to ease some of that deflationary pressure in their real estate market. And if that happens, that means that that China is sending deflation to the rest of the world and pulling inflation into their market to deal with their housing market and their deflationary forces.
Right.
That would be a situation where you could get some temporary, you know, whether it's a couple of weeks or a couple of months of deflationary forces to asset prices and to commodity prices as well. I mean, if you think about it, they basically shut the country down again. I mean, the goods aren't flowing and it's going to be hard for commodity prices to continue to rise if China's not importing them and the ships aren't arriving and the ships aren't leaving. And, you know, that could be a situation where you get a deflationary shock.
Yeah, because you got demand destruction there.
Demand destruction, exactly.
Temporary demand destruction. And then for just so people can get their head around what you're saying as far as exporting deflation, importing inflation, just imagine, guys, if they devalue the currency and then you go to Walmart and everything is 50% lower because everything there is being shipped in from China, which they can now charge a lower price because they devalue their currency. That's what he's talking about as far as exporting deflation. And then you would import inflation because you would be basically printing the money in order to get the value of the yuan down to create that dynamic in the first place. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And as always, make sure that you stand up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.